Welcome to Ugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Well, good morning. This is Sam Grass in Atlanta, Georgia. Joining me is Lee Cantor and Brad Culp, again, is joining us in Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, Sam. Good morning, Lee. How are you gentlemen this morning?
We're hot. I don't know about you. Is it hotter there in Texas?
Well, we're hot, too.
Who wins the temperature battle? Well, that's trivia, right?
Well, I don't know if that's trivia, but we're going to be close to 100 here today.
Well, then you win. You win. We're only going to be 94.
Well, you win the humidity battle, though, because we're down probably about 35% humidity.
I'm sure of that. Brad, this morning, I'm going to turn it over to you for the all-important segment of the show called Trivia. So why don't you jump on that and run with it?
All right. Well, in the spirit of current events, I'll take you back to 1968 in Buenos Aires, where 74 people today were killed and 150 injured because of a soccer stampede. So I don't know if any of y'all have been following the World Cup.
No.
Anybody?
Brad,
anybody? Bueller?
Brad, I have to. You tie this today. I mean, it's relevant. I don't even know what to say.
Well, tying it to the show is not going to be easy, but at least we got some current events. The reason I brought out the Buenos Aires disaster was because, as you may or may not know, there are 8 groups of teams playing in the World Cup, and 5 out of 8 of the groups are led by South American countries, including Argentina, which leads with the most amount of points, 9 points. So they are obviously soccer fanatics, and we are down with only 2 points, struggling to survive. And last I checked today, we were tied with Algeria 1-1, or maybe it was 0-0 at the half. The other interesting thing is that none of the European powerhouses, France, Italy, or Spain, are leading their grouping. So it's kind of exciting.
Brad, I've got to ask. Now, you're supposed to be working. How do you know the current score?
Yeah, that's a little suspicious.
Okay, put me on the spot. Yeah, I do try to prepare for this show, so that was part of my homework, actually. So. Anyway, well, listen, let's get on with it. We have 2 guests this morning. We have Diane Granger, who is an RN and the congregational nurse at Lawrenceville First Baptist Church. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Brad.
And we have Carol Larkin here in Dallas. Carol is a geriatric care manager with a company called Third Age Services. She specializes in helping families with Alzheimer's and related dementia issues. And we are going to talk to Carol Larkin first this morning. And so welcome, Carol. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Brad. I look forward to the opportunity to spread the word.
Well, Carol, as we always do, we try to start out by just getting a little bit of background. So it seems like everybody has an interesting story about how they got into the business that they're in. So maybe if you could give us a little bit of background on where you grew up, how you got interested in what you do, where what your educational background is, if we could start there.
Sure, absolutely. I originally come from a very cold climate, Rochester, New York, vastly different than the heat down here in Dallas. I was a liberal arts major. This is my third what I call life. My first life, I ran a welfare department in Ohio. My second life, I was a computer-aided design draftsman that did HVAC for clean rooms. vastly different. When the tech downturn came, early 90s, I decided to start my third life, and I went to back to graduate school at the University of North Texas. I got a master's degree in applied gerontology, which is the study of older adults applied to their everyday life. While I was there, I did my internship in the Dallas chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. And from there on, I was hooked. I knew that that's what I was going to do, to help families that are dealing with these awful, awful diseases, to do what I could to ease their stress, to provide answers for them, just to make life better in horrible, horrible circumstances. Mm-hmm.
Before we go forward, and it's I'm real interested in how you do that, given you know, the gravity of the situation with these families. But so you went from being, you know, an engineer or a designer to going for your master's degree in applied gerontology. That's not exactly a degree that you hear every day. So what was it that motivated you to want to pursue that degree in gerontology?
Good question. Actually, for most of us that are in the seniors world, it has something to do with our own family. And, in fact, it had to do with my mother. When my mother was living in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, my dad had died years and years ago. She was living there alone and was beginning to outlive her friends. She was lonely. She was isolated. And I was her telephone connection to the world. Well, when I was working at the Alzheimer's Association, I learned so much that I began to pick up on funny little peculiarities that she was beginning to exhibit. So, as she liked to say, I went to Florida and swooped her up and brought her back to Dallas to live with me for a while and to establish a new residence here with a lot more care and support. And that's essentially what happened. She lived with me for about 3 months while we looked for a place, and it really wasn't all that hard for me because my business is helping people find communities that can support them. While we looked at the places, she was going on with her life, acclimating to Dallas. I only took her to three places, and on the third place, she walked in the door, and she took one look at the lobby, and she put her hand on her hip, and she said, "Honey, where is my apartment?"
Funny.
So that was it. And she lived there 5 years, happy, 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 and went on to move to another assisted living when that assisted living started becoming deficient in care. And unfortunately, just about a month ago, she passed away. It was sudden. It was not as a result of Alzheimer's. And in a strange way, I am very thankful that she did not have to endure the later stages of Alzheimer's. When she passed, she was still having an excellent life.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know one of the things that you do is you participate in and build communities of support with people that are going through this. And I know you've got an incredible story related to your mother's passing, and I'd love for you to share that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. One of the things that I do is I write on a blog called the Alzheimer's Reading Room. It really is, as far as I'm concerned and a whole bunch of other people, the number one blog for information, for help, for support on the Internet. The guy who runs that, his name is Bob DeMarco, and he's out of Delray Beach, Florida. And people occasionally write in to the what he calls the concentrated mind of the Alzheimer's room. Mm-hmm. And a lady from Michigan wrote in. Her name was Jolene Ferrick, and her question just tugged at my heart. Her father, who was an early onset Alzheimer's patient, was late in his disease. He had begun what I call acting out. The community he was in didn't know what to do with him. They sent him to essentially a psychiatric hospital where they doped him up to zombieville. And he was just miserable. Jolene wrote in and asked what to do. I wrote her back and said, oh, you know, here's my email, let's email. And we did. And I had too much information to give her, so I said, call me. And gave her my phone number. She called me. And essentially I talked her through the options that she had and talked her through what she needed to do to secure her father the very best care, the most thoughtful care, the most caring care for his final months. She asked me to help her locate a community up there. Hard to do when you're in Dallas and she's outside Detroit, but I told her I would look around on the Internet and see if I could find something, and I did. Even from their web pages, I was able to ascertain a community up there who, what I call, got it. They did the right things so that their people were enabled to live their best lives. Told her about it, and she actually moved her dad there. And he lived the rest of his life in a great place with great caring people and was as happy as he could be. Well, he actually passed away 2 weeks before my mom did. And I saw that on her website. She has a website called Frankly Speaking Alzheimer's. She is doing a documentary about her dad, his getting Alzheimer's and all the way through the disease. I wrote to her because we were sort of friends, internet friends. I wrote to her and told her about my mom and that I was going to have a celebration of my mom's life. And I did. And lo and behold, she shows up. I mean, she flies in from Detroit to Dallas to show up to celebrate my mom's life and to celebrate her dad's life.
And you didn't know she was coming.
No idea. It was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I had no idea that I had connected that strongly with her to make her jump on a plane and do that. Well, we had a wonderful time. A wonderful, wonderful time. And I am so happy that she got that strange hair and came down here. We'll be friends forever.
And that is actually documented by her on YouTube.
Right.
And it's probably a URL that's way too long to...
Actually, she has it on her blog.
Okay.
And this morning, I put it on my Facebook page.
Okay.
So
and her blog is that franklyspeakingalz.com?
It is. That's
okay.
It. That's it.
Very good. Well, I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your business. So tell me about Third Age Services, what you do, where you focus. Maybe give us a little bit of a background on what geriatric care managers do and what they are and how they're credentialed, if indeed they are.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm going to just put this in so you can answer it whenever you want to, but you talked about finding a community that quote-unquote got it. And if you could give our listeners, you know, some of the characteristics of a community that gets it.
And
happy to do that.
Carol, if I can interrupt, I want to expand on that too, what Brad just said. I'd like to know how in today, with the information that we have, that some of these, as you described, these patients with dementia are misdiagnosed and mistreated. That when you said that, told that story, I'm in my mind going, how in the world does that happen? So I'll turn it back over to you, but some point in your conversation, if you could give us your opinion of that.
Sure, be happy to. Okay, let me talk a little bit about third aid services. Third aid services is what we call, is my business here in Dallas, Fort Worth. We are a geriatric care managership, and that is an up-and-coming profession. Geriatric care managers are essentially professional people who act as consultants for individual families to help guide them in the best care for their loved ones that have that some are general and they will do everything, cancer, COPD, so on and so forth. I'm a specialist. All I handle is the dementias. So I guide families through what legal sort of things they need to protect their parents, and I will send them to elder care attorneys. I guide them through what their options are for care, whether it's home care companies, if they want to keep their loved one at home, if it turns out to be that the loved one has behaviors bad enough that it takes what I call a village to take care of them. I pre-vet, if you will, communities that care for Alzheimer's patients, assisted livings, residential care communities, CCRCs, which are continuing care retirement communities, all sorts of communities. I pre-vet them so that when the family needs to send their person, that they have a choice of two of them that are already pre-vetted that will essentially be within their price range, have the care that is needed for their loved ones, and that fits the personality of the person with dementia. So I and other care managers save time, save money, save stress on the family because God knows they have enough of that. So that's what care managers do, and I take the toughest cases.
And you're not afraid. In fact, you pride yourself on making specific recommendations.
Yes, absolutely, because it's very easy to hand a list of communities or home care companies to someone, and there's 50 on the list, and it would take them forever to go through it, and they don't even know what they're looking for.
Right.
So I just cut to the chase. I educate my families and teach them what to look for, and then I've already pre-vetted them with the best companies, so I just start them out at the top.
That's terrific. So maybe we can kind of work out. I know we gave you a handful of questions, and you probably don't even remember them. Let's go back to Sam's question about, how this woman in Detroit, how did this happen to her and her family?
One reason was that the family didn't know about the existence of geriatric care managers, unfortunately. If they had, chances are this wouldn't have happened. The reason that her father was sent to the psychiatric unit was because of a lack of training and knowledge in the Alzheimer's facility that he was previously in. If they had been adequately trained, they would have known how to deflect or redirect her father in a non restrictive way so that the behaviors wouldn't have happened and he wouldn't have been sent to the psychiatric hospital. Then, to make matters worse, when he goes to the psychiatric hospital, many times they don't know what to do with the dementia. So their answer is drug them. We can stop these behaviors. Well, it doesn't do anything to address how to fix him. All it does is knock him out. It's sad.
It's startling that a facility that claims to specialize in Alzheimer's or dementia would not have the capability to properly, or the training to properly handle that.
It's startling to everybody but me, which is actually one reason why I started my training program. I now have a training program for those communities and home care companies. But the short answer to that is that there hasn't been a lot of training given to anybody, even doctors, on dementia.
So that's actually a nice segue then into how do you evaluate memory care communities or even doctors for that matter, and what are the characteristics of someone that gets it? And obviously, you know, you can provide a lot of help in your business, but, you know, as somebody that's just starting to do some research, you know, what would they look for?
Let me start with doctors,
okay?
And this is going to be a sore point with a lot of doctors, but I'm sorry. Just sorry. There hasn't been a lot of teaching in medical schools about older adults. There are very few what we call geriatricians. Regular internists are used to dealing with people whose metabolisms are different, and the way they run their life is entirely different than an older adult, much less a demented older adult. Unfortunately, many people go to their family doctor who has not had any of this extra training, and they will say, oh, give me a, see if my loved one's demented or not. Many family doctors do the 5-minute MMSE is the name of the test, and if they score poorly, they'll throw some drugs at them, Aricept or one of the others, and say, yep, got dementia, that's it. You know, it's a death knell. It is not the right way to be diagnosed. The actual proper diagnosis consists of three separate areas that the doctor is looking at. One is an MRI or another scan of the brain, which will show that the brain, if there is a form of dementia there, that the brain has literally atrophied. You can see the airspace between the skull and the brain.
Wow.
Yes. In addition, that MRI or other scan will show if there is what's called a vascular dementia, which is a blood in the brain from an artery bursting, or in other words, a stroke. That also causes dementia, and so the MRI or other scan shows that. The second portion of the testing is blood work, because believe it or not, there are 70 different diseases that show symptoms of dementia.
Wow.
Some of those diseases are actually curable because it's deficits in the person's body of essential minerals, or something like maybe if the thyroid's off, that can cause dementia. If they are low in B12, that can cause dementia. Well, the blood work will show those oddities, those deficiencies. So that's why I say people need a full, they really need a full scan of the whole thing, because there are some correctable things. The third part is the actual questioning. But It usually, to be done right, there's a number of tests done, not the 15-minute MMSE. Mm-hmm. It usually takes at least 2 to 4 hours, depending, to look at all the different areas of cognitive deficit. Neurologists do this. Geriatricians do this. And the occasional internist does. So if you can find one of those internists, or certainly a neurologist that specializes in diagnosing Alzheimer's or other dementias, or a geriatrician, then you have a full diagnosis. That said, there are doggone few of them.
So we are coming close to our time here. I want to give you an opportunity to just give us a few characteristics of the facilities that people might look for.
Sure.
And then, well, let me do that, and then I've got one final question for you.
Sure. Facilities that get it have a low patient-to-caregiver ratio. If you can find one that is at no more than 7 to 1, you're doing really well. Most of them run at 10 or 12 to 1 to begin with. You want to ask about the philosophy of care. If a community does not have a thought-out philosophy of how to care for their people, they don't know how to care for their people. You want to ask about the management there, because when somebody goes to an assisted living or nursing home, it is not the walls that are touching their parents or their loved ones, it's the caregivers. The caregivers are the most important element of this whole thing. Well, the caregivers either care or don't care about their jobs, mm-hmm. due to the way the managers treat them. So if the managers are treating their employees poorly, then you can most certainly assume the patients there are treated poorly. So those are three things right off the bat. Mm-hmm. It's nice if the place looks good, but believe me, the caregiver's treatment is way more important.
Great. These are all pieces of advice, and they, in some ways, may preempt this last question, but the last question is, to our listeners that might be dealing with family situations, what piece of advice would you give them, particularly as they're just entering the process?
If I can give two real brief ones, one I've elaborated on already, get a real diagnosis. You would feel absolutely awful if your loved one had a dementia that's correctable and you didn't. So get a real diagnosis from a geriatrician, a neurologist, or an internist that's got it. Two, once diagnosed and you know what you're dealing with, it is crucial that the family get educated. They have to know the nature of the beast that they are dealing with. 90% of the behaviors, and I say that gently, of the awful things that happen, 90% of them are due to caregiver error. It is not actually the fault of the person with dementia. They are reacting to lack of education, to ignorance on the caregiver's part. Mm. Once the caregiver knows, then life gets better automatically.
Now, those are outstanding pieces of advice. And I know we're running late, but I know you have one last thing you want to talk about, which is a cause that is near and dear to your heart.
Yes.
So if you could talk to us about that, and then tell I'm looking at your book here.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners how they can contact you if they're interested in finding out more about your geriatric care management services or your education.
Sure. I have a cause that is so dear to my heart, and I hope becomes dear to the listener's heart. on the website I was talking about, Alzheimer's Reading Room, I met a 13-year-old boy from Boston. His name is Max Wallach. His great-grandmother died from Alzheimer's disease. He used to visit her in the nursing home, and he noticed that those people with Alzheimer's and other dementias, when they were doing puzzles, they were happy, they were engaged, they were enjoying themselves. In his great-grandmother's name, Max established a nonprofit, a charity called Puzzles to Remember. And what he does is collect puzzles and distributes them to Alzheimer's patients all over the United States, in veterans' homes, in nursing homes. He collects them and mails them. I heard about him, and I said, how can I help this kid? And got in touch with him, and I am now distributing puzzles for him. What's really cool about it is Max is 14 now, and he'll be going to Boston University next year.
My goodness.
Yeah, pretty smart. He is also an inventor, and he has worked with a puzzle manufacturer to, for the very first time, create puzzles specifically for Alzheimer's patients. Big pieces, a few pieces, adult themes. They are in the works now, Max tells me. They will be coming out at the end of the summer. I want every Alzheimer's patient to have access to special puzzles for him if it'll help their day.
Terrific. And so how can they, is there a website?
Yes, you can reach Max at his website at www.puzzlestoremember.com. And he also, you can email him directly at puzzlestoremember@gmail.com. You can also go on the Alzheimer's Reading Room. There's a whole section devoted to Max there. You can reach him through that.
Excellent. And to reach you?
To reach me, you can check my website out. It's www.thirdageservices.com. I can be called. Our office number is area code 214-649-1392. You can also email me, and it is at CarolLarkin@tx.rr.com, but let me spell it because it's a little unusual. CarolLarkin@tx.rr, which is roadrunner.com.
Very good. And as always, we will post that information on the web as well so that people can just click through. Carol, thank you so much for being here this morning. It's terrific information, and we just appreciate you being here.
Thanks so much, Brad and Lee. Anytime. You can tell I'm really shy. I don't like to speak or anything.
Very good. Well, thank you again. And, Sam, I'm going to turn it back to you to chat with Diane.
Thank you, Brad. Carol, thank you. As Brad indicated, very, very informative information. We greatly appreciate it. In the studios with me in Atlanta, Georgia, is Diane Granger. Diane is a registered nurse by education, and she is a congregational nurse for Lawrenceville First Baptist Church. Good morning, Diane. How are you?
Good morning, Sam. Thank you for letting me be here today.
It's a pleasure to have you. Why don't we begin? Tell us a little of your background, who you are, how did you become a nurse, why did you become a nurse, and for how long have you been a nurse? And we'll just take it from there and start.
All right. Well, actually, I'm a native of Alabama, but I've lived in Georgia, specifically Gwinnett County, for most of my life. I attended Georgia Baptist School of Nursing, and I'm a proud graduate of that fine institution. I've spent most of my career as a nurse in the operating room, and I've worked for Gwinnett Medical Center, Gwinnett Hospital System, for 30 years now, and spent most of my career in the operating room there. about 12 years ago, I began thinking about doing something else other than being an operating room nurse. And that's the wonderful thing about the nursing profession is it's very specialized, and there are so many avenues that you can take to do what you want to do in nursing. And I began to explore feeling that God was calling me to do something else. In 1994, Gwinnett Hospital System began their program, Parish Nursing. And I believe that it was one of the first hospital-based programs in the Southeast. And from that, it began with four nurses in different churches. And the purpose of this program is to promote health and wellness to church members and communities surrounding the church. Parish nursing began in the early 1980s by someone by the name of Granger Westberg in the Chicago area. He was a Lutheran minister, and he began to wonder how patients would do coming from the hospital and going home, how their care would be affected if they had a nurse to become involved, and what better setting for that to happen would be in the church. So he started out with several nurses and promoted this program, and from there it has grown to an international base. There are programs of parish nursing in countries, the United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, as well as here in the United States now. So back to my story, I began searching and reading more about parish nursing, and as I said, our hospital began a program in 1994. I interviewed with the director at that time and attended a training seminar sponsored by Georgia Baptist College of Nursing. After my training, I didn't do anything for a while, and a couple of years later, an opening became available at Lawrenceville First Baptist Church. I applied, and much to my surprise, I was offered the job. So I did go ahead and get some more training through the Marquette University in Wisconsin for a parish nurse certificate. And I have now been at Lawrenceville First Baptist Church for the past 10 years.
That's great. Two questions. First of all, describe the best you can the relationship between Gwinnett Medical Center and Lawrenceville First Baptist Church. How does that relationship develop? And then tell us what it is that a congregational nurse actually does on a daily basis.
Gwinnett Medical Center partners with churches, and we have been very fortunate to have a wonderful group of volunteers. And we also have been supported by the Foundation Hospital Board. They have, in the very beginning, provided funds to help place nurses into churches. They have been willing to put up the funds to begin the program where they are helping the church in the beginning to pay the nurse's salary. And by the end of a three-year period, the church is able to provide, once they see the value of the program and what a nurse can do for their congregation, the church is able to provide the funds by the end of the three-year period to provide that nurse's salary.
Seed money.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Tell us then, Diane, what does a day in your life look like? I wrote down as you were talking, in-home interventions. Is that part of what you do? Just tell us what it is.
The role of a congregational nurse or parish nurse, or as we are now called, our name has changed again, we are faith community nurses. Our roles vary, and each nurse has a different job description, I would call it, according to her church's needs. We all have the same roles, but according to the size of the church, the population that makes up the church, we all carry on more specific roles. But we are all, make referrals for agencies, for home health, for hospice, community agencies. We are there to make hospital and nursing home visits and visits in the homes. We provide education classes for all ages in the church. We do health screenings, whether it be blood pressure screenings. We bring programs in to do those screenings. And we are there as personal health counselors. People can come in and talk to us about problems they are having if they don't understand a specific diagnosis. We refer to physicians. If someone needs a specialty physician, we can refer to that. And our job is not to decide for the patient or the client. We provide them information and empower them to make those decisions for themselves.
Do I know the answer to this. Do you go out into the home and visit some of your members?
Oh, yes,
and,
frequently.
And when that happens, are you, in the clinical sense, doing an assessment, or are you there to provide information, or is it a combination between those two?
It's really a combination of both. We don't do hands-on nursing. We are there to assess, determine what needs are, and how best to meet those needs, whether it be contacting a community agency, whether it be letting ministries in the church know, for instance, if a senior needs help with yard work. In my church, we have a group of men who can go and meet that need, whether it be the senior needs meals. You know, we can let them know about Meals on Wheels. So we do both. We assess the situation and then provide information and resources to meet that need.
A holistic approach is what I think.
Correct.
The district, yeah, that's
correct.
Tell us, if
Diane, to what extent are you involved in the surrounding community versus your congregation, membership of First Baptist?
I am involved in the surrounding community. Our church, Lawrenceville First Baptist, we do have ministries to the community, and any programs or classes that we have, we advertise to the community. The community is welcome to come to those. Because of my presence there in Lawrenceville, I am the only congregational nurse in any of the churches located in Lawrenceville, and they are aware of my presence there. So I do have referrals from churches in the community. You know, if they don't have a resource, they contact me, and I am able to help.
Obviously, what you do, Diane, can be a very stressful situation when you certainly are walking into someone's home and you see issues that are not good. There's got to be something that recharges your batteries, and I know you made reference to this earlier, but what do you find so rewarding in what you do?
The people that I serve and work with in that church are just wonderful. They are a loving group of people, and as I said, we work with all ages in the church, but I do most of my work, I would say, with senior adults, and the rewards I get from that are just overwhelming. Walking with someone through a diagnosis, a terminal diagnosis, and seeing them accept that diagnosis and going through the hardships and the pain, working with families, and seeing them die with peace and dignity, surrounded by their families. And sometimes they're not surrounded by their families, but to be there with them, to walk with them during that journey, is wonderful.
Yeah. Do you consider this a job?
Diane?
Brad. Do you consider this a job or a ministry?
It is a ministry.
Yeah,
it is definitely a calling. Not every nurse can do this. I firmly believe you have to be called by God to do this, because God didn't walk with me every day, my day, there are so many needs out there. And sometimes I plan my day, or I think I'm going to plan my day, but really God plans it for me. He presents people come to my door that I never expect to come to my door, and my day can change in a minute. So,
Brad, you had something.
Yeah, thanks. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. As you were talking about walking someone through a terminal diagnosis, that's got to be one of the most difficult situations imaginable. What is your approach to doing that?
First of all, to help the patient or the client to understand the diagnosis, to help them obtain all the resources that are out there to learn how to cope with the diagnosis, and then to help the families understand what the diagnosis entails and the progression of the disease. And faith plays a big part of that. Most of the people that I deal with, of course, are church members, so they do have a faith in God. So I just help them I pray with them, help them to seek God's guidance and seek the way in which they should take their treatment, and how they should go about their treatment, what the different areas of treatment they need to go in. So prayer is an essential part of it. And just being present. You know, nurses, a lot of times, we want to fix things. Many times, such as a terminal diagnosis, we can't fix things. And a lot of what we do is just being there for a person, being present in that time, and just listening to them.
That's great. Thank you very much, Diane. Like we asked Carol, I want to propose the same question to you. Is there a special cause that you are involved in that you would like to elaborate on, an organization or something of that nature?
I would just like to I'm involved in Gwinnett County Senior Services. One of my health ministry team members, one of the things I do is coordinate volunteers for the different ministries in our church. And I do have a group of volunteers on our health ministry team, and one of our volunteers is with Gwinnett County Senior Services. And we are a big support of that. We are a big support of the Lawrenceville Co-op there in Lawrenceville, and help with food drives in that. And we are involved in helping with the different ministries of the Gwinnett Baptist Association.
Great. For our
And if I could just tag on to that, Diane, our company as well are great supporters of Gwinnett County Senior Services. And I'm just going to make a shameless pitch right now. We have a silent auction coming up in the latter part of July. I believe it's the 22nd, but if I'm wrong, I will post it on the website. But it's going to be held at Del Mar Gardens in Lawrenceville. Please, to our listeners, come out and support Gwinnett County Senior Services. And we also have a golf tournament coming up August 30th that will support Gwinnett County Senior Services as well. So forgive my shameless promotion there, but you opened the perfect door for me, Diane.
That's okay.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. If you didn't do it, I was going to, Brad. So we're thinking alike there. Diane, for our listeners who might be in the latter stages of their life and they're seeking something, they don't know what they're seeking, whether it be information or medical care or whatnot, what piece of advice might you give those individuals?
For those people or for caregivers or family members of those people, my advice would be to don't go the road alone. Don't go this journey alone. There are all sorts of resources out there, and you just all you need to do is ask for help. I know with senior adults, especially those of the greatest generation age, those of in the 80s and 90s, sometimes people don't want to ask for help, but there are all sorts of resources out there, whether it's your local church, your local hospital, your county senior services organization. Call and ask, and chances are if they don't have the answer, they can tell you where to go for the answer. So just ask for help, and there are plenty of resources there for you.
And how could someone who wants to ask for help, how could they reach you and do so?
You can reach me at Lawrenceville First Baptist Church. My email is diane@lawrencevillefbc.org. Or the church website is www.lawrencevillefbc.org. My number is 770-963-5121. Or for the Gwinnett Medical Center Congregational Ministries for Health and Wellness, you can go to www.gwinnettmedicalcenter.org and go under Programs and Congregational Ministries.
Diane, thank you for the great content. Thank you for being our guest. It was great having you.
Thank you. It was a privilege being here.
Well, that's it for today. I'd like to thank Diane once again and thank Carol for being our guest today. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. And I want to remind you that you can listen to today's broadcast at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, if the youth of our nation are its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that our seniors are this nation's greatest national treasure. Thank you and have a great day.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.